Welcome to Counterculture the Podcast. This is the first episode and we're happy to have David Tonner on the show. David is one of the organizers of the Edmonton chapter of the Zeitgeist Movement. We're going to chat with him about the life of an activist as well as some of the challenges and opposition facing the Zeitgeist Movement. Thanks for joining us. This music is from danosong.com. It's royalty free music. He's got all kinds of stuff on there. The website is www.counterculture.com with no E's, and you can follow us on Twitter under the same name, counterculture, counterculture with no E's. So without further ado, I never say that. Here's the interview. How do you say your last name? David Tonner?
Tonner.
And you are an active member of the Zeitgeist Movement?
Yeah, I'm one of the main coordinators of the Edmonton chapter in the Zeitgeist Movement.
I seen the I went to the third film in Edmonton at the, what was the theater called?
That was probably the Stanley Miller Library.
Yeah, that's right. That's the one. So you guys organized that?
I didn't. That was before I joined. But yeah, that was organized by probably Aaron and Allison, who at the time were the main people in the movement in Edmonton. So they put that on, and shortly after that, they had a meeting, which was my first introduction to the Edmonton chapter. And so that would have been probably, I think, March of this year, and I've been with them since then.
So you weren't part of Zeitgeist Movement before that?
No, I had seen the movies, the first and second movie, and I watched the third one. A friend of mine, whom I know, who's in Orange County, he's one of the main organizers there. He started posting a lot about Zeitgeist on Facebook, and I sort of became more interested. So I watched the third movie, and I thought, this is actually the kind of stuff that I've been looking for personally in terms of an activist movement. I had recently gotten involved in activism, probably late 2010, and Zeitgeist, to me, just made so much sense, so much more sense, in fact, than the average activist movement, simply because, unlike other activist movements, which address individual symptoms, as I like to call them, of our societal problem, and I mean, I have nothing negative to say about other activist groups. I respect them and I support them, and I do, in fact, get involved with others as well. But when it comes to dealing with what plagues our society, I think that it makes so much more sense to address the root cause of all the problems, be they environmental, social, or what have you, rather than addressing individual symptoms and trying to, heal a community, heal an ecosystem, which are great and honorable causes, but they don't address what is actually causing all these problems. So it's like trying to put out a fire by fanning the flames, mm-hmm, instead of actually putting it out at the source. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's almost like I read the Zeitgeist Movement's statement on Occupy Wall Street, and that's almost exactly, you know, it's kind of supportive, but at the same time, it says what they're doing is not treating the root, right?
Yeah.
Have you been following Occupy Wall Street?
I have to a certain extent. Until very recently, actually, until just a couple days ago, I was under the impression that that was an isolated event taking place on Wall Street. And so, I keep up with it as much as I can, but
it's sure grown. Like, it's all over the place now.
And see, that's the thing. And I didn't realize that until a couple days ago when I started seeing Occupy Together. Somebody sent me a link to that, and I thought, wow, this is becoming a big movement. And so I started talking about setting up an Edmonton group for that as well. But before I got around to it, somebody beat me to it, to creating that on Facebook. And I think now we're actually discussing how we can become part of that wave here in Edmonton. You know, first of all, you got to think about whether that's relevant in this city or not, considering it's, you know, the financial core is very limited in Edmonton. But yeah, definitely that's something that that I'm interested in.
I think it could get a lot of support in Edmonton and Alberta because there's a lot of people ready to protest. Like, a lot of people protest the tar sands and a lot of financial things that happen in this province. So I think a lot of people would probably come out for that. It's kind of a combination, right? Of like Occupy Wall Street, the unions and stuff. Different unions are getting involved and stuff. Like, it's not one real, you know, single cause. 1% of people have all the wealth, right? Basically, is what Occupy Wall Street kind of started.
Yeah, going back to what you said about Alberta and activism. Activism in Alberta has a long way to go before it becomes a viable movement, just because we do live in a very money-driven province. You know, the tar sands are basically what runs our entire economy. And so activism against the tar sands here is still relatively minor. Awareness of the problems of the monetary system is limited. But I do have hope that different groups can come together and create that movement here in Edmonton as well.
So you were saying that you were kind of involved in activism before the Zeitgeist movement. Was there any things in your upbringing or your education or your experiences up to now that kind of put you on that path?
In terms of my upbringing, you know, well, I did grow up kind of all over the world. I've lived in 11 different countries since I was young, and I think that was the first thing that got me thinking in a completely different way than the average person, I think, because it opened my mind to different cultures, different aspects of life, really, around the world. I've always liked watching a lot of documentaries and, you know, reading stuff about what's going on, and so I've always had a sort of a greater awareness. In terms of activism, you know, it's funny, and I like to call this either my Harajuku moment or my my Cove moment. I don't know if that Harajuku has any relevance to you. It's a Tim Ferriss thing. It's basically the moment when you realize something, like an epiphany. In terms of activism, I never realized that activism, what it really entailed, and that there was such a thing, ironically enough. But I was watching The Cove, which is a movie about the slaughter of dolphins in Japan. So I was watching that, and there's a group of activists in that movie that go out to the cove in Taiji in Japan, and they secretly film this slaughter in order to get it out to the world, make people aware. And that was the moment when I realized that there are people out there who dedicate their time to fighting for causes that they believe in. And that was literally the moment when I realized that I wanted to be an activist. So this is probably a year and a half ago. And I started looking into what I could do as an activist in Edmonton. So that was my introduction to activism.
Right on. So being an activist, is there a lot of challenges that come along with that? Is there a lot of, like, what does your family think about? How much time do you dedicate to the Zeitgeist movement or other activism activities? Like, how much does it affect your life overall, basically, being an activist? Is it consuming?
I would say it's consuming. You know, it's a choice. It's a choice of how much you want to be involved. And I've decided that I want to be very much involved. You know, if I could be a full-time activist, and that's what I would do. Unfortunately, I can't because I still have to work. I've been lucky in the sense that people around me, my family and my people that I'm close with, have been supportive. My family is supportive. you know, I'm not geographically close to any of my family members, so that kind of simplifies it because I don't have any commitments to them except I was in a relationship until very recently with a girl who supports the Zeitgeist movement as well, so I was lucky in that sense. But it does require a lot of time. Especially since I do like to be involved in a variety of things. And, you know, being in Alberta, which is a predominantly conservative province, still blue-collar, redneck, you know, it's an oil city.
Yeah.
People are not aware of what activism is. And as soon as you start talking about environmentalism, green issues, and that sort of thing, people, their eyes either glaze over or they, you know, you get pigeonholed as a hippie, as a tree hugger. And overall, people don't really want to hear about it. So it hasn't, you know, the reception isn't great, but I wouldn't say it's affected my life adversely at all.
Even as far as like the Zeitgeist movement, the end game or, the society that they'd like to see, it's totally different. So is there a struggle to live within a system that you and other members of the movement see as so flawed, right? Like the system is so flawed, and yet you have to exist in it for this time while you work towards a better system. Do you ever struggle with that?
Do you mean struggling to
just
live as a hypocrite using money and...
Basically, or just... Like emotionally and stuff, sometimes it's a totally daunting challenge, right? The type of change that the Zeitgeist movement promotes. So does it ever feel like you might not get there, or it's people are just way too ignorant, or you know what I mean? It's such a huge change, right?
It is that. No, I see what you're saying. It's definitely daunting because, well, especially like I said, in this part of the world, there is extreme skepticism and opposition to the concept of not having the monetary system. You know, moving past the system of human labor, the skepticism is such, and the ignorance is such that yes, it can be daunting considering that we have so much opposition. There's so much to overcome before we can ever start implementing small aspects of this change.
That opposition,
personally,
that opposition seems almost natural. Yeah. Like not having a money system is just totally foreign to everybody, so they almost naturally oppose it, right?
Of course, you know, challenging the monetary system is almost as equal to challenging the notion of God or, you know, gravity. It's like if you were to come up to someone and say, listen, you know, gravity is not actually real, they just laugh in your face. And the monetary system is the same. You say, you know, we don't need the monetary system. People laugh at you. People say, if there's no money, it's almost as if they can't imagine existence without certain concepts.
Yeah.
And money is one of those concepts because it's so prevalent and it has been part of human existence for millennia.
Yeah, they just can't even grasp it takes a lot. The movies, the fact that Zeitgeist movement does a lot of media, a lot of the promotion is through media, different art forms and stuff, and especially the videos. That's probably like you really have to drill the concepts into people's heads so that they can start to see that it's actually a possibility or there's actually some logic behind it because it's such a hard concept for them to grasp, right?
Yeah, and you know, what we have working against us is the fact that a lot of people at this point, because of mass media, because of the internet, a lot of people are jaded to anything that would radically overturn their preconceived notions, their built-in notions. The term conspiracy theory is at the tip of everybody's tongue.
Yeah.
And the fact that the first Zeitgeist movie is so much about conspiracy theories, as it were, does not help, because anyone who's seen the first movie, if they don't absolutely love it, they will point out to you, well, okay, so you're trying to disprove the concept of Jesus Christ, first of all, and then you're talking about 9/11, you know, the ultimate conspiracy theory in the last decade.
Yeah, of our time. Yeah.
It's so easy to peg. Yeah, it's so easy to get pegged as conspiracy theorists, and so there is that to contend with, and it's not easy to get past that and actually show people that what we're talking about is not only based on fact, but it's actually realistic and can realistically be achieved.
Excuse me. You were talking about opposition earlier. How much you know about the group Anonymous? What's the relationship between Anonymous and the Zeitgeist movement? I read some negative stuff, but it's hard to know where everything comes from, especially dealing with Anonymous, because you know anybody can call themselves Anonymous and write whatever they want. But it seems like there is some. They did make some videos and stuff about the Zeitgeist movement. Do you know much about that?
I'm not aware about any sort of any videos of that type whatsoever. That's news to me. I would say.
How about,
you know, Anonymous?
Sorry, how about the opposite then? How about the Zeitgeist movement? Have they made any statements regarding Anonymous? Like, do they support Anonymous or do they, you know, has there been any statements?
I would say that I've heard nothing negative said or written about Anonymous. I think that overall we support them and we'd like to. Okay, so the thing about Anonymous is that they, somewhat like the Zeitgeist movement, are a very much open source activist movement, which is a relatively new phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
There's more and more groups operating along this model now, but we're fighting for the same cause. You know, we're fighting the same enemy. They do it predominantly through hacking, but they do also have protests and rallies. And even though, what I was going to say is that we're fighting the same enemy.
Mm-hmm.
We, in some sense, use similar tactics. I really don't see why there would be any criticism on our part of Anonymous and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of going back to what you said earlier about Anonymous, where anybody can call themselves Anonymous, that is, I think, one of the problems we encounter simply, strictly in regard to what you just asked me, because anybody really can state their own personal opinion and say that they speak under the moniker Anonymous,
yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
Pose the Guy Fawkes mask, and therefore nominally they would seem to represent the anonymous movement. The thing is, there is no organized Anonymous movement. It's individual people doing their own thing, more or less along the same lines, but if I have an opinion, I can voice it and say it's an Anonymous opinion. Whereas Zeitgeist, even though it is open source, anybody can join, there's no central leadership. There's more or less a series of tenets that we represent, that we advocate. And you can't just go out there and say something as frivolous as we should kill all dogs because dogs are vicious creatures. And this is an opinion that the Zeitgeist movement holds. You can't do that because that's not a tenet that we uphold. Whereas Anonymous, you can do that.
Yeah, they do have. I think those Anonymous chat rooms that they use to pick their targets. Like they pick websites and stuff, right? Based on, you know, if somebody was in the news for like an insurance company was in the news for ripping off a bunch of people or whatever, Anonymous would say, okay, this is a story. This company did this. Yes or no, should we go after them? And then on that channel, they'll vote, right? So I think it would be more publicly known that, okay, Anonymous chose the Zeitgeist movement as a target for this reason or whatever. So I think it is just videos made by, you know, there's a lot of disinformation when it comes to Anonymous just because of what you just said, that anybody could make the videos, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and I think that there are always going to be people that will oppose Zeitgeist for whatever reason it is, you know, and we don't claim to be perfect and to have all the answers. So there will always be criticism. And the best we can do is to take it in stride and perhaps to learn from credible criticism, you know, something that is actually, that does make sense. But other than that, it's so easy to criticize in this day and age. And what can we do about it? You know, we support Anonymous as much as we can. We're not affiliated with them. And that's all there is to it, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And so how about to continue on that, how about the situation between the Zeitgeist Movement and the Venus Project? Because I, like myself, I saw the the first movie probably like not too long after it came out. And I had already heard of the Venus Project. And like the Venus Project was really interesting to me. And once the two got together, it made so much sense. And I was just wondering, like, how did that partnership dissolve? The Zeitgeist Movement basically adopted many of Jacques Fresco's ideas on like optimal societal structure and all that kind of stuff. So I was just wondering what happened there. I don't really know the whole situation.
From what I understand, and to be honest, I haven't researched it in depth. I haven't watched too many interviews with Peter Joseph or Jacques Fresco. Mm-hmm. But to my understanding, and this could be incorrect, but Jacques Fresco started at some point saying that he wasn't getting the credit that was due to him by Peter Joseph for the ideas of the Venus Project. He started saying that Zeitgeist was taking the credit for that and even misrepresenting a lot of the things that the Venus Project stood for. And so he said that they no longer wished to be associated with Zeitgeist, that they were breaking the relationship. There were some unpleasant exchanges made between Jacques and Joseph, I believe. I know Jacques said some things about Joseph, which I felt were uncalled for. But basically, there has been a split.
He's fairly stern when he wants to be, Jacques Fresco. Like he's lived a long life and he's adamant in his beliefs.
He is. Yeah, he's one of those people that doesn't suffer fools easily, as you would say. That's my perception of him. And so he made that decision, and I think that they started their own movement, which propagates the main concept of the Venus Project. But having said that, you know, the Venus Project is still an excellent model, according to myself personally, and according to the Zeitgeist Movement, if I understand it correctly. And it's still something that we champion, you know. And I think that this rift has, in fact, served us. It has been a benefit to us because, and this is my opinion personally, not necessarily that of the entire movement, but my opinion is that by freeing us from a strict adherence to Venus Project principles or models, this has allowed us to be a truly open source project, which we claim to be. And rather than simply promoting one future model for society and infrastructure, we can say this is an excellent model, but there are also other models which have their own merits, and let's try to find one or a combination of all of these which actually makes sense for humanity and which is easily implementable. So I think it's been a good thing, in fact, because it frees us up from strict adherence to the Venus Project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I've been on the forums quite a bit for the main Zeitgeist Movement website, and there's a lot of like when you introduce these concepts to people, especially when it comes to actually building the society, building the transportation and all that, a lot of technical people get interested. Like, okay, if we had the freedom to build society any way we wanted, like a lot of engineers and stuff get right interested in that, and you know what I mean, start to put forth like a lot of different concepts. Like there was a lot of stuff about the circular city, is that the best model, and so on.
Absolutely. You know, the whole open source thing, this is a term that I have started applying to Zeitgeist, and I think it defines it very well, because it's like looking at open source software or Wikipedia. If you give people people, unknown people, you know, not established engineers, architects, or scientists, but there's so many people out there that are not accredited by the establishment, like Jacques Fresco himself, but who have tremendous talent, skills, and ideas, in, you know, ingenuity. If you give people opportunity to express those and to utilize those, so often you can come up with much better end products and end results than what you get from the establishment. Just look at the Linux system, for example. You know, it is a constantly improving and growing software, which has far surpassed what Microsoft has given us. And not because it's run by people that are more intelligent or that are more skilled, but because it's open to everyone. And so you can tap so many more resources and you can tap more of that human ingenuity than you can when you've got a company of a certain number of people and you're limited to that, you know, and you've got to go past the whole approval process and all of that, you know, the whole rigmarole of bureaucracy and all of that. So yeah, I think open source is the way to go for pretty much everything.
And it removes the financial motive. Like the guys that are adding input on the website, they're giving like technical insight and for no personal gain. Just they would like to see the end result basically, and be a part of it.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is what makes Wikipedia excellent. And I mean, it's not a flawless website by no stretch of the imagination is it perfect, but I was listening to a TED talk by Jimmy Wales, the creator of Wikipedia, and I think he said there's five, it might have been two, but I think it was about five full-time employees of Wikipedia, and they don't contribute to the content of the website. They just maintain the framework of it, you know, the hardware. Everything else that you see on the website, all the information, all the editing, all of that is done by volunteers, by people who don't do it for any monetary remuneration. They simply do it because they want to see this become an excellent resource of knowledge and information. And volunteering your time.
Unbiased.
As unbiased as possible. Yeah. So right there, you, just with that simple example, you can easily disprove people that will tell you, well, if there was no money, nobody would work. That's total nonsense. All you have to do is look at the increasing rates and numbers of volunteering around the world, especially in developed countries where people have the time to spare. But I mean, people don't work simply because they get paid for it. And studies have demonstrated that over and over.
I think a really good example of that is forums like the Zeitgeist Movement Forum, but really any forums. Like I go to poetry forums and stuff where people put input on other people's work and help them improve it and stuff. Or I go also on Joe Rogan, you know, Joe Rogan from Fear Factor. I go on his forum and there's people there that they could pose any problem that they have in their life, and all those guys will pitch in and give them suggestions and stuff, and you'll get, you know, and there's never any monetary gain is never comes into the equation, right? So
yeah, you're right. No, I've noticed that too. You know, you put in a question into Google, and you know, most of the results you get are not certified sources. They're just people contributing to forums, and most of the time the stuff that they're contributing is not bullshit. It's actually helpful and it's accurate, and that's excellent.
Yeah, for sure. So you mentioned Peter a couple times. Like you said, there's no central leadership, but what is Peter Joseph considered as then? Peter Joseph is the guy that made all the movies, right? The Zeitgeist movies. And he does, he's largely a figurehead. Like he gets interviewed a lot, and how much of it is his like direct ideas on how things should be and stuff?
You know, I was going to say he's a spiritual leader, but that's not something that's probably not the way that he would like to be described. And figurehead somewhat, you know, you could almost say he's the Svengali of the entire movement. You know, he is a huge inspiration to everyone. And so inspirationally, he leads the movement and the ideas that he presents through his podcast and his interviews, and of course the movies, are what structures the movement and, you know, what more or less we all go by. But he's not a leader in the strict sense, in a traditional sense, and he doesn't want to be seen as a leader at all, except for in the inspirational sense.
Is he...
And I'm not sure if that answers you.
Yeah. Is he the founder of the actual movement, or did he made the movies and then the movement kind of just developed from that?
I believe he's the founder. I believe that after the second movie came out, he did start... but I believe he started something called a movement online, and he got overwhelming support from it, from people that had seen the second movie. So I believe he did start the official movement,
mm-hmm.
More as an online presence than anything else. And it just went from there. It just, you know, chapters started popping up all over the place spontaneously.
Did you, this is kind of a little, did you ever hear his interview with Alex Jones, or did you watch that?
No, I did not. I have to admit that I have not watched I probably haven't watched more than one or two interviews with Peter Joseph. So I haven't seen it. And I try to avoid Alex Jones. So, I don't know, I find him irritating. But no, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, Alex Jones is, that's his job. He's selling, you know, that he's selling himself and whatever. But he, yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. He started, like, kind of set Peter up, sort of like he started, like, yeah, we agree on a lot of things or whatever. But then he got into, It started out as a good interview, but it ended up as the Alex Jones show, where he's yelling and screaming. And
so, does Alex Jones disagree with the Zeitgeist movement?
Well, he's the king of conspiracy theories, so he has his own theories of why 9/11 happened and whatever and stuff. So he kind of wanted to sort of trump Peter Joseph publicly because he's the king of conspiracy, I guess, basically. But he can't he doesn't argue points logically and stuff, Alex Jones. Once it gets too deep for him, he just starts to yell and stuff.
You think it was good to attack Obama when he had an 85, 86, 87, depending on the poll approval rating?
It's funny. He's funny. But,
I rammed him the day he got elected as a traitor.
So if you had to simply explain the Zeitgeist movement for those people that do or would be naturally opposed to the ideas, how would you, what parts of it would you really make sure you hit to sort of, as an introduction for people, right? So so they could kind of open up to it?
Okay, so we're talking about addressing the main arguments by the naysayers, right?
Not even arguments, just to say, hey, here's an idea, and put it to them in a way where they wouldn't automatically pose the arguments. They might be open to it, right? What parts of it do you think would appeal to the most people, basically?
In my view, all the best aspects of Zeitgeist are also aspects which are reminiscent of some very scary notions. For example,
communism and stuff.
As soon as you mention equality, people think communism. And you can dispute that very easily. It's sort of the first impression. Uh-oh, communism. Everything else, I don't hear what you're saying. You said communism. You said equality. And then you get mechanization of labor. And right away people think, oh, you mean like Skynet? What if robots take over? You can't let robots. And right there, you've lost a whole bunch of people. And you talk about no money and people go into the whole barter argument. Oh, so you want people to bring their onions to the market. And, you know, so it's tough to really present it in a way where you almost preclude those obvious arguments.
I think if you introduce it to people, like one of the most appealing things is the idea of if you didn't have to work, if you didn't have to concern yourself with money, what would you do? Most people are going to say something other than the job that they do, like a huge percentage of people. So we'll say, okay, well, wouldn't it make more sense then to have a society where you could do that instead? Like, I think that's a huge appeal to people, mm-hmm. right?
I agree. And the answers that I most often get are, well, I would pursue my hobbies, or I would volunteer my time. you get the odd person that says, well, I would sit around and do nothing. But overall, that is definitely a very appealing part of the whole concept. But unfortunately, it does carry with it so much built-in skepticism, just because people will say, well, it's impossible. You can't have a society where people don't work. But just to answer your question, I would say definitely stressing the fact that we can create a society where people are relieved of labor. And this doesn't mean that you don't work. This doesn't mean that there is no meaningful work. Meaningful work is important to very many people who believe in the importance of meaningful work. But meaningful work and working for a salary, having a job, is a completely different thing. Meaningful work and working in a factory are two very, very opposite things. People no longer having to be enslaved, the fact that you can rebuild communities, you can have social cohesion, these are very positive aspects of the movement, which I think are important to stress, especially to people who are skeptical.
Yeah, it's not saying nobody needs to work. People need to work to make it happen. Like, people have to input, like they do on the forums, on a larger scale. So there is a lot of work involved. It's just the kind of work that those kind of people want to do, the kind of work that they do freely on the forums, and they would do freely if given the opportunity and given the freedom to do that.
Yeah, well, because I think most people, when you first present that idea of no work to them, they don't realize that given the right circumstances, and you know, this does require quite a massive mind shift, because in our present society, the way that we think, the way that we're taught to think today, it is somewhat impossible to achieve. But if you had that gradual mind shift, most people, I would say majority of people, if they didn't have to work, they would still work. But it wouldn't be work that they are forced to do in order to survive. It would be work that they feel is meaningful to them, kind of like the contributions that people make today to forums online, you know, volunteer work, helping others, helping build something that supports an entire community. People would not simply sit around, but it's hard to convince someone that if you give people freedom, that they'll still contribute. You know, it's something that has to really be demonstrated, that it has to be taught, it has to be shown that people don't simply work for money, because we grow up with the notion that you work because you get a reward. And there is still a reward, it's just not monetary.
And the people that do work just to get paid are usually less happy, or less happy in this system than people that were fortunate enough to pursue the path that they always had wanted to get into, like whether it's architecture or you know, applying themselves creatively or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree. And you know, unfortunately, those people are few and far between. The people that can honestly say that the job that they do allows them to pursue their dream, you know. Mm-hmm. Those people are few and far between. You could even argue that people like actors and musicians are not necessarily happy with their career. But yeah, I think that ideally, if you grow up in the right circumstances that allow you to have an open mind and, you know, develop your curiosity, then everybody has some ambition, and everybody has a dream, if not more than one dream, that they want to achieve and something that they want to pursue. And so I would argue that there is no person out there, given the right circumstances, given the right opportunities while they're being brought up, that there's no person out there that would simply sit around and have nothing that they want to do.
Yeah, that almost seems like a silly argument. Like, if people were free to learn and stuff, everybody's going to develop interests. Like, that seems like a silly argument for people to make, that people would just sit around and whatever.
It does seem silly, but at the same time, you get that, because you get the argument of, well, what about all the people that are on EI, on employment insurance, or the dole, or what have you, the welfare? What about those people that sit around all day on their couch and watch TV? What about those people? Where is their motivation, you know? Like, and you get that argument all the time. And the problem is that people don't realize these people are not born this way. They're not born as couch potatoes. They are raised as couch potatoes, not necessarily by their parents, but by their environment. You're not born a couch potato. You become a couch potato because of your environment. You're not born a genius. You may become a genius because of your environment. You don't become anything. You're not born anything. Mm. You become whatever you are because of the environment that is afforded you through your developmental years.
So rather than say, like, how I said, if you could pick one aspect of the movement to introduce people to try to, because you are like advertising in a way, right? So you do have to approach it from, you know, what's the best way to advertise this where you can capture people's attention enough to give them the ideas. But the other way to look at it is, rather than introduce the movement, if you had a chance to introduce the one thing in society that is begging for change, like anybody could look at this aspect of society and say, our society needs to change, and then introduce it that way, like the reverse way, rather than the positives of the movement, you could introduce the negatives of society, right? So if you were to do it that way, what's the one thing that you would point to before anything else?
Short of just simply being cliche and saying, love thy neighbor. I would say that the most important thing for any individual, and, you know, this does subsume everything from environmental problems, social problems. I think the primary thing that every human being needs to do is simply to become aware of the world, become aware of their environment. And when I say environment, people tend to misconstrue that as simply meaning everything green, trees, animals. Mm-hmm. You know, environment is everything. Environment is what you live in. It's your house. It's your street. It's the trees. It's the animals. It's the cars. It's environment is the soil that sustains you. You know, become aware of your environment. Become aware of the effect that it has on you, the effect that you have on it. And so this means, start thinking about what you do. Start thinking about where your money goes. Start thinking about those little things that you do and how they affect everything around you and how that comes back to you indirectly. So, you know, how you get around, how you shop, how you communicate with people, how you communicate with corporations, the media, the government. Start thinking about how your life affects everything around you. And if you can do that, you know, step by step, then that awareness right there will lead you to the realization of what you need to do if you ever want to make a change. Simply by starting to think about what you already do right now and its effects on everything.
Mm-hmm. So as an activist, a person that gets involved with movements and activism and stuff. A lot of people, myself included, I'm guilty of this a lot, is I really like, especially the third film, the way they actually propose a solution, right? And something that people could say, okay, there's reason to get behind these ideas because it's working towards something. And any activism, like for people to get involved, just like this Occupy Wall Street, more and more people are getting involved because it looks like there's a possibility for change. And deep down, a lot of people feel, even if they can't put a name on it, they feel the pressure from the financial system and from our society. They feel those pressures. They feel tired from work and all that stuff. As an activist, how do you convince other people that it is worth it? It is worth it to get involved. It seems like, it seems daunting. It seems like, you know, people are ignorant and a lot of people are never going to change. But how do you keep yourself motivated, and how do you motivate others, basically?
Well, yeah, you could, I would tell people to look at the achievements that have been made in the past in the name of change. You know, because you're right, people will say nothing's ever going to change. This is such a common and cliched cop-out of a statement, oh, nothing's ever going to change. What's the point?
So, yes, they stay on the sidelines because of it.
Yeah, and it's a cop-out. And honestly, all you have to do is start looking back in the past at the way that history has developed. And if you can still, after having done that, if you can still argue that nothing ever changes, then I believe you have not really been looking. There's so much evidence for how things have changed because of small groups of people standing up and doing something. Even individual people. Look at the Christian Reformation started by one man, Martin Luther. Mm-hmm. And look how that has changed. How that changed things in the Catholic Church. Look at everything from the segregation in the United States, going back to the abolition of slavery, to the rights of the blacks, all those movements that were more or less started by one person or a small movement, and that did lead to massive changes. Everything from the influence that PETA has had on our society, thanks to two people that started a movement. And I'm not saying I necessarily agree with everything that PETA stands for. It's just an example. Greenpeace. Look at all the achievements that Greenpeace has made. Look at one of my greatest inspirations, Ralph Nader. Mm-hmm. People, and you know, the average person doesn't know who Ralph Nader is. If you're American, you might know, but you think, well, Ralph Nader, haha, big joke. What has he ever done? What has Ralph Nader ever done? Do you wear a seatbelt today when you get into your car? Yeah, well, thanks to Ralph Nader, you wear a seatbelt because it's, you know, Ralph Nader has a tremendous effect. That's one man, you know? And so if you can look at history and still say nothing ever changes, then, yeah, you're not really looking. Mm-hmm. Because things do change, and very often it takes one person to stand up and to start doing something. And even though it's daunting, even though you've got basically the whole world standing in opposition to you, if you don't persevere, that's when nothing changes. But if you do, chances are, if what you stand for makes sense, you will get support, and gradually things will change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's varying degrees. Like, to get involved with Anonymous or Occupy Wall Street or something where the change proposed is not so radical, or I don't know if radical is the right word, but it's not such a vast change, right, proposed. Mm-hmm. Like for myself, I work out by Fort McMurray. I actually work on building roads in that area. And I was born and raised in Alberta and stuff, but it seems like such a big change for people that don't have the means to just drop things and pick up a totally different way of thinking and stuff, especially if you have families and stuff. You know, people are stuck in the grind of today's society, right?
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, that's definitely something, it's a very common thing to hear. And, you know, activism is not for everyone, and nobody's saying that you have to be an activist in order to make a change, absolutely not. But everybody has the ability to make personal changes in their life. And it's from something as simple as choosing where you shop. And especially in North America, this is relatively easy for us to do. Just don't go to Walmart anymore. Mm-hmm. For example, this is just one thing. Choose where you shop, where you spend your money. Your wallet is the strongest voice that you have. In some ways, it's stronger than the vote that you have.
Oh, for sure.
Choose where you shop. Right there, choose simple things. Choose what you feed your children. Choose how you get around, how often you drive, how often you travel. Choose who you vote for. Simple things. Choose how you raise your children, what values you impart to them. These are all things that do eventually add up to a big change. So you don't have to be an activist and go out and do protests. No, do things on a small scale, and it matters.
Does your Edmonton chapter, or does the Zeitgeist movement in general, do they go over all those kind of things, and do they involve themselves with, like, boycott these certain companies or support these products, or and things like that? Like, would they have suggestions for people who heard what you just said and are interested in doing that and making the right choices, but don't know what those choices are?
That sounds like a two-part question almost, so I'll answer, first of all, for the Zeitgeist movement, what we do. I think it's a very individual thing, and each one of us does certain things, and we make certain choices. You know, a lot of us are very strict about what we eat. A lot of us are strict in the way that we shop. But when we talk to the public, these are always things that we try to mention, because people do ask us, well, what can I do? How can I get involved? And so, yeah, you know, if anybody ever wants to know how they can make a change on whatever level that they are comfortable with, there's all of us are very well versed in a variety of aspects of personal interaction, personal developments, personal effects that you can have on the greater picture. So, yeah, I would say absolutely. You know, if anybody is interested to know what they can do, and if they don't really know how to find the resources, then ask anyone in Zeitgeist Movement, because we're not simply talking about no money. Most of us, if we're in this movement, then we are involved, or at least have some knowledge of all the major problem areas, you know, and in some way we try to make changes in that, in those areas. So I would say it's a good thing to do, is to approach, to ask us, and we can definitely try to guide people in those directions.
Just by basically saying, this is our personal choices, this is from our personal development and stuff, this is what we've seen, these are the choices we made, and for these reasons.
Yeah, and we can back it up too. It's not simply you know, a personal bias towards a certain cause, or we can back it up. You know, we can say, if you are interested in this, which is something that I do personally, then here are resources that you can look up on your own, which will show you why it makes sense to do this. If you know, if one of us says, well, don't go to the pet store and buy a dog, it's not simply a matter of personal preference. We can actually back it up. We can tell you about puppy mills. We can tell you about what are some alternative options that you have. You know, so there's actual research. There's good evidence behind these things that we can present to you.
Mm-hmm. One of the main reasons, like, my website is on counterculture. It's basically on the history of, like, right from the Beat Generation and all these counterculture groups and movements, right up to today, Zeitgeist Movement and Anonymous and everything like that. So I'm really interested in activism, and more people's inquiries or people's interests are in, like, even reality TV, no matter how commercialized it's become or whatever, people are interested in seeing behind the scenes into everything. Like, activism, people see protests on TV, people see they go to the Zeitgeist film or whatever, they see activism, but they don't see the life of an activist, right? And they don't see you know, that's what people are interested in, though, the behind the scenes of worlds that they just couldn't see otherwise, right? I've noticed, like, I watched a lot of Peter Joseph's interviews, and he seems to be more and more, he's got to measure his words all the time and stuff like that. Like, there's a lot of responsibility with everything he says, and obviously he's faced a lot of opposition, so he does kind of seem jaded and stuff at times. And he's like number one activist, kind of, you know, like a totally dedicated person to a cause.
Yeah.
For yourself, or for other people that would like to get involved, how do you maintain a balance? Like, you still, you know, everybody still wants to be happy in the world that you currently live in, right? So how do you balance that?
How do I balance my activism and everything else?
Yeah. And maintain your happiness.
My happiness and my sanity.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's individual, of course, but I think it's important that if you're going to fight for something, not to starve yourself while you're doing it. So don't spend 24 hours on any cause. You know, it's just everything in moderation, I suppose. I'm a normal person. I'm a regular guy. I just have really progressive views on things, you know. And so if you talk to me, I will voice some progressive opinions. And instead of spending 3 hours watching TV when I get home or sitting around watching, you know, the football game on the weekends and going out to, I don't know, to the shopping mall, instead of doing that, I'll devote a couple of hours to a cause that I believe in, you know. So on a weekend, I may spend a few hours at a rally. When I come home, instead of putting on a TV show, I may spend an hour or so sending out some emails, doing some research online. But the rest of the time, I still do the same things that everybody else does. I go to work, and, you know, I go out with my friends, and I go out to see a movie once in a while, and I go out to a restaurant. So it's like anything else. You've got to balance your life. You can't spend all your time doing one thing. Mm-hmm. So activism is just like any other hobby, I suppose, if you want to call it that, or any other activity. You don't spend 5 hours a day doing yoga. You go out and do it once or twice a week for 2 hours or so. You know, and the same with activism. You do as much as you are capable of doing, and just maintain a healthy balance in your life. You know, it's everything in moderation, I guess, as cliche as that sounds.
For sure, yeah. Yeah. It's just another pursuit. It's just another personal pursuit.
Until you can do it as a career and get paid for it, which is even better. But at the same time, you know, I don't get paid for it because I don't necessarily support the monetary system. So that would be very hypocritical of me. But you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah. But does, like, Peter, he still does some work on the side, eh? But he must make some money to support his work.
He makes music. He makes electronic music, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he would work on soundtracks and that sort of thing. And so he got paid for that. I assume he's still doing that on the side. But I really don't know that much about his personal life and how it has changed since the movies. I know that he must have some source of revenue, because, for example, I am aware that he contributed about $30,000 to the media event in Los Angeles, which was part of the Global Media Festival. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Los Angeles being his base, he contributed a lot of money to that specific event. So that money must come from somewhere. So he must have a source of income.
So how did you guys hold a media event in Edmonton?
Yeah, we certainly did. We had nothing on the scale of the Los Angeles event. So, you know, we didn't have any big bands playing. But we had an event. We had some musicians. We had some speakers. We had two or three other activist groups that presented their message. We had some videos, some well-produced videos. We had some art. So it was a pretty good event.
Things like that must be part of the reward, eh? To be able to socialize with like-minded people and open-minded people and be able to present your ideas in a kind of, you know, people are coming there for that reason, right? So they're open to the ideas. That must be part of the reward for your work that you put in.
That is definitely a reward, and it's very uplifting. But at the same time, it's important not to get carried away with that and not to forget that if you're talking to somebody who's open-minded and who supports your cause, you're preaching to the choir. And that is something that's very important to remember, that we're not in this in order to speak to people that already agree with us. We are in this to convince, or to not just so much to convince, but to
propose,
to open the minds of those that currently disagree with us or that are not aware of any of this. And so if you only talk to people that agree with you, you're not getting anywhere because they're already on board. It's important to spend most of your time talking to those who don't know about it.
So was there some curious people come to the event?
We had a few. I would have to say predominantly they were people that know the movement, support the movement, or somehow involved with other similar movements. But there were people that simply came in because they had seen a poster, they had heard about it, and were curious. So, I would say it was in that sense, it was balanced.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a little over an hour. I really appreciate your time, and I've always, yeah, like I said, I've always been interested in activism, and always found myself kind of stuck on the sidelines for whatever reason. But I really look up to the work you do, because I've been interested in the Zeitgeist movement, Anonymous, and all these other movements, and it's because of people like you that spread the word, right? That someone like me would even hear about it. So keep up the good work.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. You know, I'm glad that we can be an inspiration to someone. And thank you for providing this forum for us, for the movement, to present our ideas to a broader audience. Thank you for your interest. And hopefully Zeitgeist is something that can be a continuing interest to you, and that, you know, in your way, you can continue to contribute to it. You know, whether that's by speaking about it on your websites or just to other people. That's excellent.
Yeah, right on. Thanks a lot, David. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Duff. And please send me the once you've got this edited, send me a draft of it so that I can hear it. And I'll be looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think it was pretty straightforward and